For the 1860 presidential election, the Republican Party nominates the Illinois lawyer Abraham Lincoln. National power brokers approach General Sam to become candidate for the presidency. Sam Houston responds on August 16, 1860 from Austin. I withdraw my name from the list of candidates for the presidency. I consented to its use because the call came from the spontaneous voices of respectable numbers of the people themselves, not because I desired the office. But the time has now arrived when it behooves every patriot to act for himself and to do all in his power to save his country from a dangerous war of sectionalism and a reckless spirit of disunion, North and South. I cannot hesitate in my belief that it is the duty of the candidates to sacrifice their hopes upon the altar of their common country. It may be said that I yield least, as my chances of success are not so apparent. But with four opponents of the nominee of the Republican convention in the field, the defeat of all is equally certain. In such a scramble, the pleasure or mortification of getting more popular or fewer electoral votes would only be comparative, and neither candidate would stand relieved before the country from the charge of having recklessly tampered with the liberties of the best government in the world. Texas and the other southern states do not put Abraham Lincoln on the ballot for the 1860 presidential election, and Lincoln wins the election because the Democrats split their votes on two candidates. Lincoln's victory on November 6, 1860 threatens to rip the nation in two. Governor Houston tries to calm the situation a week after Lincoln's victory. He addresses a crowd at Huntsville on November 14, 1860. I need not assure you that whenever the time shall come when we must choose between a loss of our constitutional rights and revolution, I shall choose the latter. And if I, who have led the people of Texas in stormy times of danger, hesitate to plunge into revolution now, it is not because I am ready to submit to black Republican rule, but because I regard the Constitution of my country and am determined to stand by it. Mr. Lincoln has been constitutionally elected, and as much as I deprecate his success, no alternative is left to me but to yield to the Constitution. The moment that instrument is violated by him, I will be foremost in demanding redress and the last to abandon my ground. When I contemplate the horror of civil war, such as the dissolution of the Union will ultimately force upon us, I cannot believe that the people will rashly take a step fraught with these consequences. They will consider well the blessings of the government we have, and it will only be when the grievances we suffer are of a nature that as free men we can no longer bear them, that they will raise the standard of revolution. I cannot believe that we can find at present more safety out of the Union than in it. Here I take my stand. So long as the Constitution is maintained by federal authority and Texas is not made the victim of federal wrong, I am for the Union as it is. I am now an aged man. My locks have become white in toiling, as I believe, for the liberties of mankind. The years that I will have to endure the misfortunes of civil war are but few. If I could feel that with the close of my career would end the miseries of my race, I could share its misfortunes with patience. But to feel that the perils of revolution must continue would embitter my last moments. And after living to witness the demolition of the best government that ever existed, I would sink to the grave without a hope that freedom would be regenerated or our posterity ever enjoy again the blessings with which we had parted. Let us pause and ponder well before we take any action outside the Constitution. South Carolina secedes from the Union on December 24, 1860. Mississippi follows on January 9, 1861. Fire eaters in Texas pressure Governor Houston to call a convention on the purpose of approving secession. He refuses. Leaders of the convention finally go around the governor and call for a convention themselves. The secession movement in Texas is counter to everything in which Sam Houston has immersed himself for nearly 30 years. President Lincoln sends a message to Governor Houston offering to land troops to support him. Houston declines. Numerous stalwart men ride to the Capitol, men with slouch hats and dusters, a rifle across their saddle. They offer the old general their support. Again, Houston declines. He does not want blood shed on his behalf. He does not want to see Texans fighting Texans. The secession convention convenes on January 28th, and 4 days later, on February 1st, votes to become the 7th state to secede from the Union. Texans go to the polls on February 23rd and approve secession. The secession convention reassembles on March 5th, and they inform Governor Houston that he is to appear before its members on March 16th, 1861, to take an oath of allegiance to the Confederacy. Houston responds with a message to the people of Texas, which he circulates on that day and delivers to the secession convention. He begins, "Fellow citizens, often in the midst of past troubles, when gloom hung over the country, it has been my fortune to address you, but never before have the rights and liberties of the people been in such danger. In the name of your rights and liberties, which I believe have been trampled upon, I refuse to take this oath. In the name of the nationality of Texas, which has been betrayed by the convention, I refuse to take this oath. In the name of the Constitution of Texas, I refuse to take this oath. In the name of my own conscience and manhood, which this convention would degrade by dragging me before it to pander to the malice of my enemies, I refuse to take this oath. I deny the power of this convention to speak for Texas. I protest in the name of the people of Texas against all the acts and doings of this convention, and I declare them null and void." The secessionists force Houston from office. They order him to vacate the governor's mansion immediately.